A public hearing on House Bill 2754.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2754 is a committee bill. We had the first hearing on this measure on March 12th. The measure establishes requirements that a school district must meet before entering into a personal services contract customarily performed by classified employees. And one of the requirements is demonstrating that the contract will result in an actual cost savings and cannot approve a contract solely on the basis that the contract will result in lower contractor pay rates or benefits.
Thank you. Mary Ann Guest and Rob Wagner, please. If I remember right, I wanted to hear from some of the opponents. And they're in the room today smiling at us.
They're here. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Mary Ann Guest, representing Oregon School Employees Association. We appreciate you hearing this bill a second time, especially since last time we didn't get to lay out what the bill was, and I'd like to walk through that. House Bill 2754 sets standards for the use of personal service contracts in school districts when the contract is to provide services that are customarily performed in-house by classified school employees. The purpose of the bill is to assure that scarce district resources are not squandered in contracts that actually cost districts more than providing the services themselves or unfairly used to suppress wages and benefits of the employees providing the service. So Section 1, what it does is it requires a school district, if they're going to enter into a personal service contract, to go through certain requirements. One, the district must clearly demonstrate that the proposed contract will result in actual overall cost savings and that the cost savings are large enough to ensure that the savings will not be eliminated by private sector and school district cost fluctuations that normally occur during the school year. Cost comparisons must include the cost of providing the service proposed to be provided by the contractor and any continuing school district costs directly associated with the contracted service. Districts may not approve a contract solely on the basis that savings will result from lower contractor pay and benefits. A school district may approve a contract if the contractor's wages are at the industry level and do not undercut school employee rates, pay rates. The contract includes a provision that requires the contractor to offer any displaced employees a position that maintains the employee's existing wage and benefit levels. There's also on page 2, lines 5 through 11, there's a section that asks for card check, majority sign-up provision. And we've heard that there are concerns, constitutional concerns with that section, and we are more than willing at this time. We don't agree that there are concerns, but we're more than willing to keep the focus of the bill on the cost effectiveness of contracting, so we're willing to delete that from the bill. Contracts must include specific provisions pertaining to the qualifications of the staff. Are we just hiring somebody off the street for a position, or do they actually have experience in the area that they're being asked to perform? Districts must demonstrate that the potential economic advantage of entering into a contract is not outweighed by the public's interest in having the school district directly perform a particular function. Section 2 allows for exemptions and allows contracting under certain conditions such as emergencies, temporary services, or when there aren't any employees that can perform that service. Section 4 is the implementation date, January 1, 2008. OSCA, the reason we requested this bill was to ensure that school districts search for ways as they're searching for ways to minimize the costs of providing services to students, that they are not swayed by promises that may not be met, but rather use a deliberative process to determine the real costs associated with contracting out those services. As you heard from other witnesses in the previous hearing, school districts have been caught in the unfulfilled promise of saving money when they have looked to contracting out services to the private sector. The need for House Bill 2754 is documented in the study from 2004 by the Labor and Education Research Center at the University of Oregon called All Costs Considered. I think you got a copy of that last time. And this time I've handed out the new report, updated report, All Costs Reconsidered, by Gordon Lafer and Robert Bussell. They're actually going to be here in a few minutes, and they will be here to answer any questions if you still have them about the reports. The reports were designed to provide school boards, parents, and the general public with information and analysis to help them in making their decision whether contracting is the appropriate way to go for a school district. Keep in mind, this bill does not say you cannot contract out to the private sector. It just says that it must be cost-effective and that the cost savings can't be borne on the back of the workers' lower wages and benefits, because that's not good overall for the state of Oregon. The principal findings in their report, Lurk's report, was contracts for school support services may not deliver promised services and savings to school districts. Contracting out carries hidden social costs that affect both workers and communities. And national data reveals chronic problems experienced by some districts that have contracted out. I have one final point, and that is Michael Shields. He's the director of student transportation for Salem-Keizer School District. Has authorized OSCA to share with you that in his experience, quote, too often organizations enter into agreements expecting one thing and receiving another. Mr. Shields added that he supports the bill's intent of ensuring that districts receive the best service by avoiding many of the games that are often occur in the price quotes provided by private companies. House Bill 2754 does not prohibit, again, the contracting of school services, but it does provide the due diligence to correct many of the problems that we've seen in the reports. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Rob Wagner. I'm the Political and Legislative Affairs Director for the American Federation of Teachers here in Oregon. Our members include classified employees in K-12 settings and classified employees in community colleges across the state. I'll keep my testimony very limited. I know you want to hear from some different points of view, and you have some other bills scheduled for today as well. I also wanted to thank the committee and the chair especially for a very exhaustive hearing that we had on March 12th, where we went, 45 minutes past time, and it was nice to have members that were committed to listening to our members who took time off work to come and share their stories. I think in your files on this bill, you'll see a lot of testimony from our members sharing their experiences, their direct experiences with this, as well as, if you remember back, we had a member who came up from California to share their experiences. The one state that we've been working with who passed this legislation in 2002 was California. They've been operating under the statutory provision in public schools and in community colleges for some time now, since implementation in 2003, it's my understanding, as well as state workers have also been living under this, and it's working well. So I don't think, you know, this isn't some revolutionary idea that it takes us beyond where anybody is. I will say that, just to reiterate some of the points that Mary Ann made, we think that it's important for school districts to look at strengthening accountability standards around their contracting procedures, that they should demonstrate actual overall cost savings. We don't think that this hinders greatly upon local control when you're talking about doing due diligence in contracting, and that this does reflect the wise use of taxpayer dollars. And also, in the report, the Lurk report, there's some evidence around the recruitment and retention of a quality workforce, which we always talk about is very important, especially in our rural communities, to have folks in committed positions for long periods of time. I think it's fundamentally different. You heard some experiences directly on March 12th, and with that, I'll be happy to answer any questions that any of the committee members have.
Any questions for Representative Holby? Marianne?
Thank you for indulging me with a quick question. And for either one of you, I know oftentimes, you know, school districts are contracting out in the hopes of saving money, and I guess your point is they should, you know, make sure that they're going to save money before they contract out. the school district wanted to save money by reducing services, they wouldn't necessarily have to contract out to do that, would they? To reduce services? Couldn't they just reduce services if they chose?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Holvey, you are correct. They could actually cut services within their own budget.
Thank you.
And they frequently do.
Yes.
Any more questions before? Well, I'm going to hear from these nice people back here. But the example of the Lake Oswego buses.
Yeah.
Now, I did, my superintendent was here today, and I said, don't sell our buses. And he chuckled about that, and they're not going to sell their buses. So I don't know if we have the votes on this committee or on the House floor this year for this. But if this stuff is going on, 2 years from now, you're going to have more stuff to talk about. And now we're going to have, if there's no more questions for these nice people, I'll let you go, and I'm going to have some nice people come up here and tell us why we shouldn't do this. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
And how they're going to prevent things like Lake Oswego buses and their transportation situation, prevent that from happening in the great state of Oregon. Go right ahead, Mr. Bennett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, my name is Chuck Bennett. I represent the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House Bill 2754. Mr. Chairman, I guess to begin with, on behalf of administrators, our classified employees are some of the most important employees we have at Oregon school districts. In virtually every case, these are employees who have absolute frontline responsibility for the safety and education of children. They play a major role in the education enterprise at the K-12 level. The times when contracting out occurs, which we hope will continue to be a reasonably rare occasion, are brought on most commonly as a result of decisions made in this building, as a result of underfunding our public schools, of demands in this building that we operate our school districts like a business, that we operate with some sort of expectation of efficiency that I think can be both translated and mistranslated at the local level, the result being every once in a while, and we hope rarely, contracting out occurs because there is a finding at the local district level based on local district decision-making, local district facts, and local district elected officials believing, and I would submit to you, and I think confess to you, Mr. Chairman, sometimes erroneously, that there are major savings to be made or small savings to be made as a result of contracting out. But, Mr. Chairman, ultimately the decision is being made by local elected officials trying as hard as they can to deal with the situation they're dealing with at the local district level, which is too often a system that is underfunded with very high expectations at both the local and state level. And I think they're trying their best to do the job that has been asked of them. Mr. Chairman, we've seen this bill before. There certainly is an interest on the part of OSEA and AFT to guarantee that when jobs of folks they represent are contracted out, that it be done because there is absolutely no question that the job will be done better and for less cost by the person or the company that essentially would take their job. Can't argue with that. It's a perfectly reasonable discussion and expectation. It's one we believe occurs at the local level, with exceptions, of course. I mean, we've got 197 school districts out there. There are going to be exceptions. There are going to be times when mistakes are made. Certainly, The example in Portland is certainly as large a one as could be set up in terms of decisions being made relative, as I recall, to their janitorial staff. It has been corrected, we hope. But, Mr. Chairman, House Bill 2754, we don't believe, is the right answer. House Bill 2754 confines the discussion purely to cost. It ignores issues like timeliness, space, et cetera, at the local school district level as part of the decision-making process. We believe, Mr. Chairman, that it would eliminate or make very difficult certain kinds of contracting out that I think all of you would agree are appropriate. Contracting out with education service districts for a whole range of services that could have been or could be done by in-district employees that might well be determined to be classified employees. Including a substantial part of our special education and targeted education services. There is some question about what would happen with contracts that we develop with community colleges, contracts for services like printing and other things that go on that arguably have been at some time or could be in the future done by classified employees. And what you end up doing is creating really an unnecessary burden on the local districts. Certainly, the argument that the expectations of cost savings will occur are ones that should be confined to local school boards. Ms. Chairman, we contract out daycare. We contract out certain kinds of maintenance. We contract out painting. I mean, the list, heating services, the list goes on and on. In each of those cases, we could find ourselves in a very difficult finding of fact. And part of the fact-finding that's proposed here, we believe, is reasonably vague or unreasonably vague. We are to somehow determine whether or not the savings is large enough to justify, and what seems to happen, Mr. Chairman, is we find ourselves in a situation where a lot of this comes in the eyes of the beholder. The lack of objective standards proposed in the bill certainly makes us uncomfortable, if nothing else. And before I turn it over to my colleague, Mr. Green, who is really better versed at some of this than I am, we just want to mention on page 3 the challenges that would occur to this that go to arbitration all require that arbitration be paid for by the school district. We assume that on every contract, we would face arbitration and the cost of arbitration. There is no downside for the challenger in this case. There's no one challenging is placed in jeopardy. And we just think ultimately, Mr. Chairman, this becomes unworkable. We certainly aren't unwilling at any time to sit down with representatives from OSEA and AFT and spend some serious time going over what we have found over the past several years dealing with contracting out and the variety of issues that I think are contained under kind of that rubric. But we would like to do that and perhaps come back to you at some future date with a bill that really does come to grips with what costs are, what objective evidence would look like that would result in some change in the system we currently have. But I'll tell you, Mr. Chairman, ultimately, the difference will be if we pass out a $6.3 billion state school fund and school improvement fund, these issues become moot at the local level. When a district has the funds to pay for the education program that they currently have, they're not looking to contract anything out. And we hope that before this is over, you all will take up the task laid before you and fund education adequately. And I think at that point, this issue really does get set aside. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Green?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jim Green representing the Oregon School Boards Association. I guess my comments would dovetail somewhat with what Mr. Bennett has told you. And to begin with, You know, when we have declining enrollment in school district, that means declining resources to the school district. And I've sat in on those school board meetings where they've talked about their budgets. I've been to those budget hearings, and they throw all the alternatives out on the table. They talk about opening up their collective bargaining agreements with their respective unions to take a look at things like financial impact. But one of the things that I think needs to be stated real clearly, this is not something school districts do lightly. Because one of the things they're going to do is affect people who work and probably have kids in their community. And it does affect their lives. I think you heard from Mary Ann Guest about the social impact that contracting out does play. And it's not something school districts want to do. But because of the financial situation that districts have found themselves in, because of declining either enrollment and declining resources to school districts, they're looking at every opportunity with which to operate as a better-run organization or better-run business. Some of the costs associated with having employees on staff, and admittedly, in 2003, for those of you that were here, we all marched up a hill to make changes to PERS to help out with costs associated with that. But some of us walked up that hill. Some of us didn't walk up that hill, and those were not fun fights. And we tried to get cost containment in a system. But one of the things I think that needs to be real clear is that whenever a school district is going to take a look at this, one of the things we have to do is collectively bargain this. We have to talk to our unions about what this means. And admittedly, in some instances, we may have done it and then got sold a bill of goods that wasn't actually there. But I think if you take a look at House Bill 2754, that's not what we're getting at. Because I listened to some of the testimony from your earlier hearing on this, and what you really heard was, if school districts are going to do this, you ought to put some parameters about what the contract ought to say, like being sold a bill of goods and not delivered promised services. And, you know, one of the areas we've always taken a look at when you take a look at contracting out, you're talking about personal services contracts here, which are governed by ORS Chapter 278 A and B. And DAS, the Department of Administrative Services, puts out sample contracts for state agencies to take a look at. And I think that's what you're talking about, is putting out some sort of sample contract for school districts so that when they do contract out, if they have to contract out services, these are some of the provisions you need to think about. But when you look at House Bill 2754, there are things in here that I don't think we'd be able to contract out. If you take a look on page 1, Section 1, subsection 4 of that, that the contract shall contain a provision that requires the contractor to offer any district employee who is displaced by the contract a position with the contractor that maintains the employee's existing wages and benefits. I think one of the reasons school districts contract out is because those things are a cost that they're trying to help mitigate when they have declining resources. And when you talk about wages and benefits, you talk about the entire package. And if you're a school district employee in this state, that not only includes your pay, that includes health insurance, maybe some sort of life insurance, and I can tell you one thing it definitely includes is PERS. And to include in a contract to require a private employer out there to pay the PERS rates that we're going to be looking at as of July 1, 2007, in school districts, I don't think they're going to want to take it on. Because if you take a look at the PERS rates for school districts, and these are school districts who haven't gone to the bond market, by the way, to pay off their UAL, their rate for Tier 1 and Tier 2 will be 17.64% of salary, plus 6% if they're doing the 6% pickup. You're looking at 23% of salary into a retirement plan, and I don't know of any private company that does that for the type of workers that we're talking about here. I'm not saying that's a good thing. I think we need to put retirement funds away for folks because we don't want to put people out on the ice floe. But I think when you take a look at the costs out there associated with PERS, other folks are going to take a look at it. Now, the new tier we created, Tier 3, you think would be a less costly system, but in fact it's 19.91 as of July 1 for school districts. You add 6% to that, you're at 25%. To require those to be in a contractor with someone who we're going to contract with, I don't think we're going to find very many folks that would want to sign up for that deal. Now, I think what you're looking at here is a bill that goes beyond what we're really truly talking about. Is we ought to be able to help school districts when they go out to contract out to protect the interests of who they have to protect, and that's the kids and the taxpayers in their school districts. There are horror stories out there about contracting out. I'm not here to hide those. You heard about some of those. And I think what may have happened in those instances, and I'm not for sure, Mr. Chairman and members, but I don't think you had a very good negotiator on the school district side negotiating that contract. What we see in some of these instances, and I've actually worked with school districts on these matters, is you have the contractor put a contract out and say, it's that or nothing. Well, I think the school districts need to do a little bit of pushback on that and say, no, if you want our business, this is the terms we're talking about, and this is why we want you to provide that service. I think you want to look at what a model contract should look like, as opposed to putting the limitations that this bill would put on when school districts want to contract out. It's a regrettable instance when we do have to contract out. But because of the funding that we've had and you get districts in declining enrollment, it causes some problems. It's been good in some school districts, however. I know there are success stories out there. I know Willamette ESD has had very good service from Sodexo on their contracting out of food service. I talked to their superintendent today about that, Maureen Casey, and she indicated that the contract they have with Sodexo has done excellent things with regard to their food service. Admittedly, they're not like a school district that provides school lunches to kids, but they do contract out services, and they indicated that their contract took a long time to negotiate with Sodexo. You don't just take that contract from the contractor. As Mr. Bennett said, I think we'd want to take a look at something in the interim that may put some sidebars around the contract and the language to protect what we all want to protect, which are taxpayers' dollars, so that it is being spent in the most efficient way possible, because whatever is being spent outside of the classroom isn't going directly to services for boys and girls. And that's the second thing we're there to protect, are the boys and girls, and ensuring that they get the adequate educational program that they deserve. And I think that's where this is the type of legislation you want to go with. What you don't want to do is what some of the things are in 2754, which really limits the ability to contract out. You have to understand, when a district does that, those are tough discussions with their local unions. They have to bargain that impact. And admittedly, we found that we have mistreated some of our employees. I can think of two school districts that contracted out janitorial services that eventually the Employment Relations Board told them, look, you did it wrong, and you need to reinstate those folks. And when that occurs, there's a process that's in statute in our collective bargaining laws to have that happen. But if you take a look at Section 4 of the bill, the arbitration provisions, I don't think that having the school district pay the cost of the arbitration when employees believe they've been aggrieved is the process you want to use. There you're taking, again, resources away from school districts to cover something that's already occurred in the collective bargaining process, because they do, under current law, have to bargain those impacts. And believe me, they do bargain those impacts. And those are huge, huge fights, and a lot of discussion and a lot of time and energy is taking in those. We'd be willing to take a look at a bill that did put sidebars or put out what a sample contract should have and what language would be there to protect assets. But in the bill that's before you right now, we simply can't support it.
And I want to just thank you guys for reaching out. That's good, and I really want you to follow up on that. And I'm damn dead serious. We can't let these kind of abusive contracts happen anymore. And if it means us here with the big hammer at the state level saying local government, local districts, you're going to do it, that's what it's going to lead to eventually. Because the people themselves will come and say, why are you letting our leaders get away with this? But I want to go back to where you started, Mr. Bennett. As far as our inability to fund education in this state or at an adequate level, and I agree with you, and I think we are going to reinvest in education this year. But before we start blaming the legislature and for inadequately funding, the federal government and the state government have tied up our resources in this state for far too long. Now, you know where I'm going with that, and I don't got to go any farther, but we have painted ourselves in a corner. We're dripping with resources in this state, and we're watching them burn and rot and flow down the river, useless. And then we also voted ourselves into a corner with our tax code. We've tied the hands of not just this state government, but all the local government, too. We can change that this year, and I hope you guys are working to do that. But I just want to talk about a couple other things here, too, because you got me going. Let me see. You said there's no downside for the challenger or the arbitrator. Well, there's a huge downside for that school district that is got signed a contract, a pretty sweet deal for those folks providing transportation, if everything that was said in this room is true, by the way. I'm assuming those allegations are true. I wasn't there. I can't prove it. I'm just going to assume they are. I'll just shut up, but I really want you to go and talk to these people, and I expect you to. Because if you don't, if we don't do something, I believe someday we're going to do something, if not this session, next session. And you want to be at the table, and you want to be talking to them, and you want to make it right, and you want to make sure this bad stuff doesn't happen, I would go to them, and I expect them to come to you and listen to your concerns as well. Because I don't want to hurt anybody. I don't want to take anybody's ability to run their own school district away from them. But we can't accept what's happening. And oftentimes, when we try to fix some things happen that we didn't intend. But I hope you do reach out to them and do that, whether or not this bill passes or not. Any questions for these fine gentlemen, who I'm grateful did come here today, because I like to hear everybody's, all the sides of every issue. Mr. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, Mr. Bennett. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Bennett, you said that just because we're going to get $6.3 billion general fund, that this won't be an issue.
I think you should be looking at that at all times. If you can save the taxpayer money, it's your responsibility to do so, and you don't shirk that responsibility.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Esquivel, I think you're certainly making a strong point, and it's the kind of pressure and it's the kind of argument that exists at the local level as well. It comes from here, it comes at the local level, and it is find every efficiency you can, save every dollar you can, and if in the process that means contracting out, so be it. And, Mr. Chairman, that certainly is part of what goes into the mix. But I think you listen to the testimony just like I did. I've heard this bill and this argument for years now. And, Mr. Chairman, I think whenever you hear the other side of the story, it is a strong argument about how do you approach this issue in both an economic and a humane way. I mean, it's a complicated issue, and I hope that we remain sensitive to the complexity of this problem. And not that that we're suggesting anyone shirk their responsibility, but in issues like this where the kinds of complexities, particularly in smaller communities, come into play and people's livelihood, their jobs, their homes come up for grabs. I notice none of us are running for the school board today to serve on the school board to deal with those kinds of issues. They're very difficult issues. So I hope we keep that stuff in mind.
I think, though, on that, my three sessions here, I hear the status quo is fine, and it's not. The status quo is not working. Something has to give here.
And Mr. Chairman, if I could, and Representative Esquivel, I want to try to get at your point as well. One of the things that's coming out of this session, and it hasn't made its way over to this side of the building yet, is Senate Bill 47. And that bill will have an audits piece, a performance audits piece in school districts that the Secretary of State's office will do. They're not mandatory, they're voluntary. So the districts can look at the variety of things they do. And we're not talking about a financial audit, whether the books balance, whether they're spending the money right, but looking at a performance audit and whether their business practices are doing well and whether they're not doing well. And that's one that we've supported. As a matter of fact, we've also been supportive of $1 million coming off the top of the state school fund to pay for those audits. We believe that school districts need to take a look at that. One of the other bills that is on this side of the building is House Bill 2614 that we've been sitting around the table with a variety of folks about that is going to have professional development money aside, but one of the pockets that they're going to do with regard to professional development is central business office functions. The other stuff that school districts have to do besides providing educational services to boys and girls. So we look at our business practices, our transportation practices, our food service practices, because in many communities around the state, the school district is, one, the largest employer in the community. They're also the largest transportation provider in the community. They're also the largest food service provider in the community. And one of the things we've been supportive of this session and will work towards during the interim is to make sure that school districts use that money efficiently and effectively. Whether that is with our own employees or whether that may be contracting out, we want those things looked at. Because one of the things we've heard from the public loud and clear is they want accountability for their tax dollars. and we're willing to step up to the plate and show them we're using the money correctly. One of the examples of that is the Open Books Project, and I hope you've all been to that website that the Chalkboard put together, and it shows how school districts are spending their money. We are all for accountability, and we want to be sure that we're spending money adequately, because if we're not doing the best thing we can do for the boys and girls in our state, and that's something we've always stood up for.
And, Mr. Green, I believe you. I honestly, sincerely believe that's what you both and your clients believe in. I believe, and I look to Representative Rosenbaum for this, but I think the last three sessions in a row, money for auditing in a lot of different areas has been cut back. So I'm all for auditing, and hopefully we can reinvest in some of that and go out and find out what we can do better. And I will add to you, but not on the backs of workers. I just don't think communities don't save money when they hire people at cheaper labor, because they all take their money and spend it at the gas station and the grocery store and buy houses. So,
and Mr. Chairman, when we're talking about auditing, we're talking about auditing the current practice. We're not asking them to come in and say,
I got you.
Contract that out.
I understand. Representative Holden.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and maybe you just made my point for me, but I just want to reiterate that because, I heard that in your testimony about contracting out, and I just, it's a philosophical discussion of, how are we going to save money, and, if we don't have enough money to provide the services that we're currently providing, do we do that by lowering wages and taking it out of workers? And, frankly, from the Oregon Business Plan, and I sit on the Workforce and Economic Development Committee as well, one of the hugest problems Oregon has is low wages. And when we lower those wages, we're affecting our overall economy and specifically in our communities as well, which, then you're in a downward spiral to gain those revenues you so desperately need. And I think there's ways to save money, and I think this bill really hits at a philosophy, I guess, aimed at, how do we look at saving money when we need to save money? Should we do it by contracting out? Well, if so, there should be some parameters around there to protect the community, and I think that's what this bill is aimed at, and I quite frankly think it's a good look at that. As we found out, if we don't have the revenues for all the services, then we should probably cut the services, and maybe that puts more pressure on the community to support the revenue we need. I don't know, but I don't think lowering wages is the right answer to doing that, and I guess I disagree with that philosophy from much of the school district's point of view that I see, because school districts have been able to contract out and have been doing so for years, and it's hard for me to believe that it can enter into a contract and with the idea of saving money and end up not saving money, and in the end they don't save any money, and plus they lower the wages of our community. That to me is totally unacceptable, and I think there ought to be a law against it. So,
any more questions for these fine gentlemen? All right, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And once again, I want you all to get together, see if there's something we can do together to make the state a better place. Great. Anyone else like to testify today on House Bill 2754? Seeing no one, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2754 and open a work session on House Bill 2941.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, House Bill 2941 is a committee bill. We had a first hearing on March 19th. The bill closes up a loophole in the current version of Oregon's Lemon Law, which applies to vehicles. The current version of the Lemon Law only applies to vehicles that are sold within Oregon. The House Bill 2941 will eliminate that provision, and the Lemon Law will now cover any vehicle sold in any state to an Oregon resident. It also establishes a 14-day deadline for a vehicle dealer to finalize or reject a transaction in which a vehicle is sold through financing. It doesn't change any provisions of what has to take place between the dealer and the buyer, but just establishes a time frame. And there's no amendment, no fiscal, no revenue.
Thank you. Thank you. The proponents of the bill are here. I believe they went around and talked to everybody. Do you have any questions or comments or concerns about this bill? If there are none, I'd entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Smith.
I'll move House Bill 2941 to the floor with a due-pass recommendation.
Representative Smith moves House Bill 2941 to the floor with a due-pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none, Crispin, please.
Representative Lee.
Aye.
Representative Berger. Aye.
Vice Chair Esposito.
Aye.
Vice Chair Holmes.
Aye.
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 Mr. Chair, would you like it on the consent calendar?
I will entertain a motion.
It's just about lemons, sir.
I'll make a motion.
Representative Smith moves we put Hospital 2941 on the consent calendar. Any discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Berger, would you like to carry this bill on the floor?
I will be happy to carry this in the floor.
Very good. I'm going to close work session on House Bill 2941. I'm going to open a hearing.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Berger.
Does that mean that I can say what's in my notes on this bill?
Representative Berger, this is a free country, and you can say anything
What I have want. Is, if not consummated within 14 days, the Marys is a dog.
Honeymoon's over.
Knock yourself out, Representative.
We can do it once.
Very good. I look forward to that floor debate. I think we'll all have caucus on that one.
That's right.
We'll have caucus on that one.
All right. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2401.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2401 is sponsored by you, Chair Schaffer. We have at the request of AFSCME. The first hearing on this bill was on February 16th. It allows a service retirement allowance for telecommunicators who have 25 years or more of credible service in the PERS system as a telecommunicator and retire before normal retirement age. And it also allows a telecommunicator who is a member of the Oregon Public Service Retirement Plan, or OSRP, to retire at the age of 55 or when they've acquired 25 years of service as a telecommunicator, whichever comes first. You have in front of you, committee members, a -1 amendment at the request of AFSCME, and it removes the provision which would establish a reduced cost of living adjustment for telecommunicators who retire before the age of 55.
Very good. We had a hearing. The department's here. Are there any questions of Mr. Delaney?
Well, Mr. Chair, we do have Mary Bakken from AFSCME.
And Mary
Bakken
from the agency as well. And I spoke to Mr. Delaney just before this. I understand. But Mr. Delaney, why don't you come up here and just describe to me what you
just
to all these nice people.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Steve Delaney, Deputy Director of Oregon PERS. First, let me be clear that this is not actually a PERS board bill, but I'm here to comment just on the technicalities of how it would work. The PERS board has not taken a position on this particular bill. The bill is being amended. The -1 amendment was so that we could reach a $0 fiscal impact on employer rates. That had been the primary concern that the sponsors of the bill have been trying to reach. And working with our actuary, Mercer, Inc., the language you see in the -1 will provide a $0 impact on employer contribution rates. The only other issue then for us would be the administration of it, depending upon how many people actually can last 25 years as a 911 operator, although I understand in the audience I've encountered one that has made it before the age 55. Our intent would be to handle those manually. It'd be manual calculation. So there is an impact on us administratively to that extent, but as far as actual issues, it generally flows with most other retirements.
Representative Escobar.
So, in other words, Mr. Delaney, when these people retire and they retire before age 55, will they be getting a reduced amount of money?
Mr. Chair, Representative Escobar, yes, they would receive a reduction in their benefit based upon that earlier age.
Now, my next question is, will this put them on par with police and fire?
Yes.
Because police and fire live it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Escobar, no, they don't. It puts them in that same general area, but not on par. And there's a couple of issues here. One, they could retire with 25 years of service at any age, whereas police and fire cannot retire early until age 50. So, for instance, if a police and fire member has 25 years of service and is age 48, they must work two more years in order to be able to retire at age 50. So it's different there. The benefit would also be different. A police and fire member has a different rate structure to calculate the benefit. 2.0 is a factor used for Tier 1 police and fire members, whereas 911 operators being general service would have a 1.67 factor, so a lesser benefit being paid out to them. Is that responsive to your
sure.
question?
Yeah, Representative. So, in other words, If I went to work when I was 18, I could retire when I'm 43?
Mr. Chair, Representative Esquivel, that is correct under the provisions of this bill, yes.
And if I may comment on that, this is a real important part of our emergency response system, and we're trying our best to recruit people to stay in these jobs, because I'd imagine, like any other job, and Mary, would you come on up here, just like any other job, the more skilled people you have on the job, the better they do their job, and it's pretty darn important we have these folks on board for as long as we can keep them. Isn't that the spirit of the bill, Ms. Buchan?
Yes, Mr. Chair. For the record, Mary Buchan with AFSCME Council 75. Essentially, what we're trying to do is give folks as many options as we can, and one of the options we found that we need is an ability to get these dispatchers, emergency communications folks, out of the system when they burn out. Some of them burn out very early. And so essentially what we're doing is we're trying to give them a dignified way out of the workforce that allows them some kind of a benefit. Now, they're essentially paying for their own early retirement through reduced benefits. So if you went to work at 18 and retired at 43, you would take a huge hit in your retirement benefit. I mean, I can't even imagine what your benefit would be. It wouldn't be much at all. And it would not go up. And so essentially what we're trying to do is move the folks out who need to be moved out in a dignified manner and allow new people to get in. And actually, by having an early retirement program in place, even though it's not a very lucrative one, we think we actually can recruit more people to come into the system. And, you know, there's a few people who can do this for 30 years. There's just not very many of them.
Yeah, I ain't one of them.
I couldn't do it for 10 minutes myself. But
Representative Smith.
I just want to make a comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had the fortune of going down, I guess the fortune, I should say, of spending 2 hours with a 911 operator from Multnomah County. And it was amazing what she did. And she was retiring this summer after 30 years. And there was very few people there that had even passed the training, done the training. That's a very stressful job. And what they have to do is amazing. So I was very impressed.
Were you at the center on Powell Boulevard in 205?
Yes.
Well, you were
right
in
there,
the fine district
for
48
hours.
When you were
there. Yes, I was,
thank
Mr.
you.
Chair.
Yes, you were.
And she's a great employee.
So. Yeah. That's the Bureau of Emergency Communications, and they have...
That was an
they have an incredible center there.
Yeah.
I remember it was a Quonset hut.
It is.
She probably does too.
Yeah.
It is a nice facility. Any more questions for these folks? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
In work session. Mm-hmm. I'll entertain a motion, please, and I need to move the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the -1 amendments to House Bill 2401.
Representative Holvey moves -1 amendments to House Bill 2401. Is there discussion? Is there any objection? All right, so moved. Representative Holvey?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2401 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Holvey moves House Bill 2401 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Kristen, would you call the roll, please?
Aye.
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 Aye. Representative Holby, you want to carry this on the floor?
You betcha. I was hoping you'd ask.
Very good. So be it, then. All right, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2401. Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2622.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2622 is a committee bill at the request of AFSCME Council 75. We had the first hearing on this measure on March the 2nd. It adds employees of Oregon Youth Authority who have the custody, control, or supervision of youth offenders from the groups that are prohibited from striking, that public safety personnel that are prohibited from striking. And there's no amendment in front of you.
I'm sorry, thank you very much. We've heard this once before. There's no one here to testify. Are there any questions? I think Ms. Buchan could answer questions on this one too, if Anyone had any comments or questions? Well, seeing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Oh, Representative Berger?
No, I was just going to make a comment.
Yes, ma'am.
Chair, that it's unfortunate kind of commentary on our world where we have to think of employees of the Oregon Youth Authority who have custody, control, and supervision of young offenders in the same way we think of guards at correctional institutions that are dealing with some of our most hardened criminals. But the fact of the matter is, we do.
Well, Representative, you know what? If I can speak from the heart for a moment, but for the grace of God, there went I. And you're right. These kids just need a break sometimes. And no one's paid attention to them. And some of them just do need someone to say, hey, you know what? You're worth something and you can become something. And I couldn't agree more. And like I said, my brothers and I, we grew up in a small town in Iowa. That's why if we lived in urban America, we'd be in prison or dead. I'll entertain a motion, please.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2622 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Holby moves House Bill 2622 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none, Kristen?
Aye.
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 Aye. Who would like to carry this bill on the floor?
I'll carry it if you want.
Representative Esquel, by all means. We already gave some of the glory to Oldie today, so.
Before I
go, you guys, we've missed a bunch of work for a lot of reasons, and I hope they don't have floor sessions anymore, but I'm going to need everybody hands on deck unless there's a family emergency, health problems, house business outside this building or house business inside this building. And I don't like this time slot any more than any of you, but I just wanted to share that with you. So,
Mr. Chair, I have a family emergency April 27th.
All right, very good. So noted. With that, we adjourn.
Mine's May 19th, sir.